Line, Willie, D-Maze, 125, 106.3, The Game, in the Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. And joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, we heard from Jeremy Fowler on SportsCenter the other day. He said the Titans could be a wild card team in the mix for Lamar Jackson. Do you think Lamar Jackson ends up anywhere other than Baltimore once all of his contract negotiations have settled?
I don't think he ends up anywhere but Baltimore. And the reason I say that is I just think there are so many, I think there's a few moving parts, you know, on it. And then, you know, until Lamar hires an agent, I think negotiating those moving parts while Baltimore continues to have, you know, essentially the first right of refusal, I think it's the most logical scenario that he ends up back there. And look, from a how to make that work perspective for the Titans, I just don't know how you do that when I believe as we sit right now, Ryan Tannehill's cap charge, salary against this salary cap this season is just about as high as any player in the National Football League. So I don't know how you kind of, you know, merge those two things together where you're on the hook for Ryan Tannehill's salary and then you would be signing Lamar Jackson to a contract that absolutely would be, you know, I would think at least you'd want more than this, but a four-year, $200 million contract. So I just don't see how that could happen for Tennessee.
Now, looking at you know, potentially what can happen with Lamar, Tim, take away the Deshaun Watson, because I think everybody, even Lamar now, and he probably realized it months ago, that contract, as much as he probably wanted, and it's not, you know, it's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I want $230 million guaranteed. Now, will you get that? That's something totally different. But you shoot for the, what is it? Shoot for the star, shoot for the moon, reach the stars, shoot for the stars, reach the moon, one of them.
Yeah, I got what you're saying.
Yeah, so to me, do you think whatever contract Lamar signs, one, do you think it will be a short-term contract? And I think you just answered that with the 4 years. But do you think his contract will be the contract that sets the market for the quarterbacks upcoming?
Yeah, I mean, look, D-Maze, I think this, and you know this from your involvement in the PA in the past, and like if Lamar Jackson wants a fully guaranteed contract, he could get it. Does that make sense? Like, now, can he sign a contract worth $250 million that's fully guaranteed? Like, maybe not. Like, but, you know, so I think sometimes, like, I've heard people talking about this, like, well, he doesn't have a fully guaranteed contract. Like, hey, Kirk Cousins did. It's like, well, Kirk Cousins signed like a three-year, $84 million fully guaranteed contract at the time. So it's like, if Lamar Jackson wanted to sign a three-year, $84 million contract, like the Ravens would be sprinting to the table to handing him a pen to sign it, right? So here's what I think. Do I think that Lamar will get more than Kyler Murray's, whatever that was, just under $190 million fully guaranteed? I do. So are we going to, you know, count that as resetting it? Yeah, I think so. And I think this is just kind of one of these scenarios where, I don't know, I think some of the details get left out in the conversation about it. Like, would – remember when we were talking about this with Dak Prescott and it was like, well, hey, how much is it? How much is it? And everyone's kind of, you know, talking about how, well, maybe Jerry Jones doesn't believe in Dak Prescott. It's like, no, that wasn't the deal. The deal was Jerry wanted to get him on, I forget the terms, like Jerry wanted him to sign a 5-year deal and Dak wanted to sign a 4-year deal because Dak wanted to be able to hit free agency, you know, a year sooner, and another crack at signing a big contract. So, you know, my guess with Baltimore is it's kind of all of these things. It's, all right, is it a 4-year deal? Is it a 5-year deal? Is it, or is it potentially longer than that? And, you know, and just kind of some of those factors. So do I think he resets the market? Yes. Do I think, as we're talking in terms of fully guaranteed money? Yeah. If Kyler Murray set it at $189 million, you know, then I think Lamar very well could get, you know, around $200 million fully guaranteed.
Now, Tim, looking at the draft and, you know, all of these mock drafts are coming out and all of them seem to be different in some aspect. But what has been sort of the trend now is potentially these four quarterbacks who we assume are the top four quarterbacks, they will all go within the top five picks. Now, if that does indeed happen, the Titans at 11, where does that put them? Do they, because now with the signing of Dillard, they might be looking at Dillard more than likely their left tackle moving forward because he's young enough. He's a former first round draft pick. So they could look at him as their future tackle. Do you think if those first four guys go quarterbacks, does that change everything moving down the line, specifically with the Titans?
Yeah, well, I mean, it certainly can. Look, let me just say this. If four quarterbacks go in the top 10, well, I mean, just by the history of how this has gone, you know, two, probably three of them won't end up being very good. Like, it's like a 50-50 proposition at best. And, you know, so if teams do that, look, the Titans, I would say, like, should be excited about that because that means that there's going to be a player that, you know, in an environment where there that not that many quarterbacks that would be going in the first round, they would never get a chance to draft. So I guess I would just start by kind of saying that. But I also think this, as you talk about guys that could go that high from a quarterback perspective, some teams that need a quarterback may need to move a little bit. And you might not be able to go from, you know, I'm just throwing out numbers. I don't know the teams that are picking there. But, like, you might not be able to go from pick 20 to pick 6, right? Mm-hmm. So in order to do that, like, you may need to hop twice. You know, you may need to get to 11 to then eventually get to 7. Does that make sense? So, you know, so I think the Titans could be in a very good spot, you know, with – you know, kind of all of these, you know, feelings about, hey, what's going on with these quarterbacks. Now, saying all that, like, and this is part of, and I think Lamar fits in this a little bit, and I think that Aaron Rodgers, to an extent, fit in this. Like some of these quarterback spots are drying up a little bit, which means it would probably also have to be a surprise. There probably will be a surprise, you know, pick at quarterback. Because I think many people thought, like, take the Raiders, for example. I think nearly everybody, call it 2 weeks ago, thought that if the Raiders didn't get Aaron Rodgers, the Raiders would be drafting a quarterback and maybe even having to move up to do so.
Tim Hasbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, will stick around with us. Coming up next, it is Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Hey, come see Caroline Willie and DeMace live, followed by Stillman & Company, tomorrow at Central Barbecue in Hillsborough Village. You can come by for some great Memphis-style barbecue and catch your favorite teams compete in the tournament. Again, that is Central Barbecue in Hillsborough Village tomorrow. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joins us now.
Tim, before I hand it over to Willie, I did want to ask you about the whole Cam Newton thing. He threw yesterday. And I know what he has said about the whole starting thing, but how many, one, do you think there's a spot for him to be a starter this year? Caroline and I was just talking about it off air, and the consensus is no, but a backup, yes. So what do you think his options are, or will there be any landing spot for him to be a backup?
I think it all depends on kind of what a team feels like his posture is on being a backup. And like D-Mace, I would ask you, man, like you had a great career, but like did you ever feel like you were a backup?
Yeah, you're right about it. Nah, not really. Nah, nope.
No, I mean, like,
especially when you've started for so long. Yes.
Like, yeah, Jerry Rice was like 57 years old and still thought he was the best, right? Right, at the very end, like, he's with the Seahawks saying, throw me the ball, come on, I can still do it.
And what's different about receiver is that, like, minimum three guys play every game. A lot of times, you know, five guys will play, you know, in games. And so, you know, if you're a 34-year-old receiver and you're playing, you know, 40 offensive snaps, like, that'll, like, you know, you're good. You're like, look, man, I'm, like, they may, like, everyone's acting like this young guy is the number one or whatever, but, you know, I'm playing 40 snaps and catching five balls a game. Like, I'm good, man. Like, quarterback doesn't work that way. It's like, you're the guy or you're not, right? And, look, I said this about Carson Wentz. Like, are you doing it? Like, are you going to, you've made a lot of money. Like, are you going to go, you know, make, a $1 million a year, $1.5 million, maybe have some incentives, like, and watch somebody else play and not be the guy. And, you know, I just, like, to me, that is where this gets really tricky. Like, I had a posture of, look, I'm going to play until all 32 teams tell me I can't. Like, and it didn't matter, you know, what I was going to get paid. It didn't, like, that was my posture of playing. Cam Newton's a different story. He was the number one overall pick. He's quarterbacked the team to a Super Bowl. Look at that now. He's made, you know, over $130 million playing quarterback. So, like, is he going to take a position where he's like, yeah, he's going to make $1.5 million? Maybe you can make another $1 million. Like, to most people, everybody listening, like, it's like, yeah, shoot, I'd do that. But not everyone is built that way. And I just don't think that, like, if I'm building a team, he doesn't have the profile to me to be somebody that I'm like, yeah, I want him is my guy to kind of be in my quarterback room. And I'm not saying that he's definitely selfish. I'm just saying it would take a lot of convincing to me to want him around. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
And I could be a bad guy, but he's experienced being the guy.
No question about it. Tim Hasselbeck is with us. All right, Tim, another philosophical question. Let's just say you're in the Titans. You're in the Titans, you know, their offices, they're having a philosophical conversation. They're debating as they try to, as Rand Carthon comes in, he's inheriting Byard's contract, figuring out, okay, what do I need to do with that? Derrick Henry's contract, Ryan Tannehill, et cetera. They ask you, best case scenario, Tim, where do we fit in the AFC picture? We're trying to figure out what to do with these contracts. What is best case scenario if we bring everybody back?
And so where do you fit roster-wise because of that? Well, look, I mean, I think I would just – I mean, let's run down them. Buffalo's better. Miami's better. The Jets would be better. You know, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Cleveland would all be better. In the conference itself – look, I guess you could probably say Jacksonville, you know, for sure. Maybe Indy, depending on what happens there. And then, you know, the West is, like, all of those teams seem to be really talented. Look, you're way down the line. You're way down the line. Willie, I think you touched on something that I think is really, really interesting in that, like, take Kevin Byard, for example. So Kevin Byard, they go to him. He's an older player. He's been amazing here. And they, you know, and they say, hey, we want to redo your deal. And he's like, hold up. Like, I know we haven't experienced the team success we've had, but, like, show me where my play has actually fallen off. Right?
Right.
Like,
that's the tough part of it.
Hey, and here's the deal. It hasn't. And he's played every single snap, basically. And because of some of the things that they have been going on, he was playing special teams last year. You say, hey, we want you to redo your deal. And I think what you risk with a player like Byard is, are you getting it wrong? Are you misreading the market? I think if Kevin Byard were on the market, I think people would be going after him and he'd get paid a lot of money.
I think you're right.
Which is probably why when they approached him about taking a pay cut, he's like, no.
But he's never played at 19.6. Because they've redone his deal, his cap hit is higher than it's ever been. That's part of the problem. Same thing with Henry.
I get it, but you also were getting him undervalued for a long time. I mean, the guy, if he continues to stack years where he's had, he's potentially a Hall of Fame player. Like, that's how good Kevin Byard's been. I mean, just being, candid about it. So, you've had him at a bit of a discount, too. So there is an element of that. So, yeah, I think that, running back is the one that I think ends up being where you have to say, this is hard, but we are looking at the trajectory of guys at that age, even though, Henry is a bit of an outlier. It's not a bit of a, he's an outlier at the position. Do we have to make some really tough decisions there? That's where I would start. I think what they tried to do, based on the reports, is they tried to go the places you mentioned, but if you read it wrong, you then maybe are getting rid of a player that is great for your franchise, is still playing at a really high level, that you would pay more for in terms of trying to get an equal player on the market, who, by the way, may not become available to you. So, yeah, I think that's the real challenge. But to answer your question directly, I'd start at running back.
Okay, so let's come back to my original question. You're in that room, and let's say the consensus in the room is to tell Mike Vrabel, okay, coach, I got to tell you, you just listed off the teams. You heard Tim, Jets, added to the list of the guys we already know are in there, the Chiefs, the Bills, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
That's six or seven deep before you get down into the possibility that the Titans, on paper, are in that conversation. I think it's time we got to retool some things. How does Mike Vrabel take that? Can he take that? And we know he's got a lot of clout. He's got a lot of say in that decision. But if the consensus in the room is, look, let's be practical here. We need to take the step back to take the two or three steps forward to get back into this conversation. How does he take that?
Well, I believe that, I think his, the move that probably bought him time was, John Robinson getting let go. Because I think basically, let's assume, and I think we all kind of are assuming that basically there is a, there between Vrabel and Robinson, there basically was hey, this direction that he's taking us is not good for our franchise. We're going the wrong direction, right? I mean, I think, and Vrabel wins, right? I mean, I think we all kind of see it that way. Fair?
Mm-hmm.
We agree on that, right? Well, I think that has bought him time, meaning, hey, we fired our general manager because of some of these moves that have put us back. So now we're not going to – we can't completely rebuild. There's not enough time for that for anybody. So how do we just kind of flip the direction that we're on? And I think that's where, that's where Derrick Henry becomes, a really big thing. I think that's why you maybe see if – if Kevin Byard's desire to play, his entire career in Tennessee, is enough for him to say, all right, I'll make this a little more team friendly to make you be able to go do other things. I think that's what's happening. I don't think they, don't know that Kevin Byard's still a really good player. I think they're trying to make some really hard decisions with, all right, can we kind of tap into his desire, being somebody that played college ball here, has been loved by this community, has tapped into this community, wants to be here. Can we tap into that? I mean, that might, I don't know that for sure, but that would be what I would guess happening.
I think the toughest thing for me, if I'm Mike Vrabel, knowing that, number one, he's such a competitor, And number two, you know, he's now in this conversation. He's in a collaboration with Rand Carthon. But as the coach, isn't it hard to separate yourself as the coach? It's hard to accept. Yeah, we're asking you to kind of go into battle next year, maybe without a Byard, without a Derrick Henry. We're talking about your heart and soul kind of guys for the good of the long term. When you know as the coach, most of the time the coach doesn't last through rebuilds like that. But he's kind of got the clout to do it. That's a tough dilemma. That's where it's hard to separate, I think, being the coach from being the GM.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you on that. And I think, you know, Vrabel's challenge is going to be, look, because of this move last year during the season, the question ends up being now, like, I think he's got a year where, like, hey, maybe they're the 500 team next year. But then the pressure's going to be on him. Like, everyone's going to forget, like, oh, hey, we kind of found ourselves in the situation because, you know, rather than paying A.J. Brown, you traded him away. And rather than, like, people are going to be moved on from that by then. I think he has a year where it's like, look, they've got to replenish. But I think beyond a year, then the pressure to win is going to mount. So I think you're looking at a 2-year window if you're the head coach. I think if you're Rand Carthon, you know, I think you maybe feel like your window is, you know, 3 or 4 years. So, I mean, that's how I see that scenario.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joining us, as he does every week. Appreciate you, Tim. We'll chat with you next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. Hey, beat caller 3 right now to win a pair of 4-day passes to Louder Than Life Festival in Louisville, Kentucky on September 21st through 24th. Artists performing include Foo Fighters, Weezer, Rancid, Tool, Godsmack, Limp Bizkit, Green Day, and more. Tickets are on sale now. Good luck with that. And coming up next, the Predators, bad loss in New York, but they came right back against Buffalo, and the young guys have absolutely shined. We'll break all that down coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
What do you make of this new direction for the Predators? Some of the young guys that have stepped in, like Luke Evangelista, who had 4 points last night, and the path forward now for Barry Trotz as he prepares to take over coming up on July 1st.
Yeah, things don't seem as bleak as they might have been when all of those moves were made, when you also include the fact that Philip Forsberg hasn't played in about a month, at least, or over a month, and Ryan Johansson has also been missing. You know, I know that the Predators have sort of hit the skids recently. They did have a big win last night against the Sabres, but before that they had dropped 3 in a row. You know, the only thing I think really keeping the Predators in this race is the fact that the Flames and the Jets also can't win consistently, though both of those teams did win last night, so the standings didn't change in terms of points and everything like that. So, I've been somewhat encouraged by what I've seen, particularly from the younger players. You mentioned Luke Evangelista had a huge game last night. I thought he was the first rookie to have a 4-point game for the Predators since Dan Hanhuis, like 20 years ago almost. Yeah. And I also saw that he tied the franchise record for most points in the period. Philip Forsberg had 4 points in the period last season. Actually, exactly one year apart. I mean, 1 year ago yesterday that Forsberg had his 4-point performance in the period against the Ducks. So I thought that was interesting too.
There you go. That was Adam Vingan on Robbie and Rex Road this morning. And hey, Preds fans, don't miss tonight's Smashville Live show at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs starting at 6 o'clock tonight. You can see your Predator star players up close and personal, plus get autographs and pictures. Tonight, the Preds player guests are Alexander Carrier and Jeremy Lozon. Smashville Live is brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Little Harpeth Beer, Superbook Sports, and Dulce Vita Tequila, pure and simple. What I've noticed from this Predators team since the trade deadline, since some of these young guys have come up, there doesn't seem to be anything that phases this team. A couple hard road losses, you know, you lose on Saturday night in overtime, and then you 7-0 loss in New York. I mean, rough, rough game for the Predators. And they turn around and bounce back, drop 7 on the Buffalo Sabres, and the young guys are shining while doing it. It just seems like, hey, you know, we're not fazed by anything. We'll get pushed back a couple steps. We'll come right back fighting. I mean, Luke Evangelista with a massive game against Buffalo, and Tommy Novak, you know, over the past couple of weeks has been consistently showing up in the box score. this team, I mean, it just seems like there's just so much energy and it's just so much more fun to watch with some of these young guys, and they're consistently producing. It's not just the energy, it's also it's showing up on the scoreboard as well.
It did last night, that's for sure. That was, I thought, a good test for them because the game, let's go back to Saturday. Well, let's even go back to Thursday. They lost to the Blackhawks. And that was the game where everybody was like, well, wait, whoa, they were on this roll.
What are we doing there?
How'd you lose to the Blackhawks? You know, and you know, it does happen. Like, Montreal beat Tampa last night. I mean, there's always one or two of those. But it was like, man, they just didn't have their A game. But it was a little bit of a reality check of where they are with the depth, et cetera. They're still missing a lot of guys. They're missing five regulars that otherwise would be in there. Then they come back, and I thought they played their guts out against the Jets on Saturday in a huge head-to-head. If they're serious about being in the race, that was a massive game. And the Jets, it took everything they had, that, you know, with basically a healthy roster, to beat the Predators without all those guys, and they lost Roman Josi after the first period. That's a lot to ask. Then they'd have to turn around and play the Rangers the next night, and that's where it kind of cratered on them. They didn't have Josi. They didn't have McDonough, and they weren't ready for that. Rangers came out of the gate firing on all cylinders, and they just overwhelmed them. So I thought last night was a really good test. What are you made of now? Well, they get McDonough back. I thought that was huge. Like, they felt so much better about their chances last night just because they had him, his presence, what he means. And he's a guy that goes so much more beyond the value of his statistics. Last night was a great example, although he even scored last night. He doesn't score very many. He scored last night, had an assist, played a great game. And then the young guys got it going again. So that was a really good test for them. So you're looking for areas where these young guys get tested and they hopefully grow up a little bit more and you see them play meaningful games down the stretch and you sort of evaluate. If you're Barry Trotz long term, you're saying, all right, where can this guy be, Luke Evangelista, in another year or two? Is he a guy I can count on as being a core guy? Can he be a top six guy year after year? The more he plays games like that, the more you're saying, you may have something here. You know, he's a second-round pick. Tommy Novak was a fourth-round pick, and he's, I think, a fourth-round pick, and he had another really good game last night. He's played at about a point per game for a long stretch now. I mean, that's top six kind of numbers. You've got him for $800,000 next year. So they've reconfigured their salary cap. We're going forward. They have more flexibility. They have room to add pieces. They've accumulated a ton of draft picks that they haven't even scratched yet. Mm-hmm. And they've got a very good farm system that you're starting to see. So I think what the retool has done, you know, it depends on what your expectations are. If you're saying, can they make the playoffs this year? I still think it's a bit of a long shot. They're not out of it. These next two games against Seattle are really important. It's like a little mini playoff series. Again, a great test. How does Novak play? How does Evangelista play? How does Tomasino play in these games where they mean something? If you win them, all of a sudden Winnipeg is going to be looking over their shoulder a little bit, even the Kraken. If Nashville were to win both games in regulation, they'd only be 3 points behind the Kraken with a game in hand. So the Kraken would even have to take some note. But the biggest thing is, hey, how do they do? You're playing games that mean something. You're not just playing out the string here, and so that's a credit. And then the other question is, will you ever get any of these other guys back? You know, Josi, yeah. Forsberg's missed 19 games now. That's almost a quarter of the season he's missed now. And still don't know when he's coming back. Parsonen, another really important guy, another young guy that you'd love to have play. Carrier, you know, these are guys you'd love to have in there.
You know, the part that I like about all of this, I mean, even Duchesne showed up last night.
Desperately needed to play like that last night. He was much better.
Moving forward, you need a guy like that because of the guys that are injured. You need guys like that that are veteran guys to step up while the younger guys are sort of still finding their way and you have that energy. You need to play off that energy as older guys, whether it's McDonough or Duchesne in this situation. But what I like about where they are as a team is this team, I can see if they were just completely out of the playoffs and it was like, man, hell, we ain't got nothing to lose. Let these young guys, and the young guys are like, man, we ain't, hell, we're here. Now, let's just play. Because we, whether we win or lose, it doesn't matter. Well, I think they still believe that these young guys, like, man, we're only 3 points out. Like, we got an opportunity here. If we keep winning and things fall the right way, we can find ourselves in the playoffs.
It's not impossible.
It's not impossible. It's far, but it's not impossible. And these young guys, even though they, you know, prior to this game, this last game, they were on a little bit of a slump. They came out and they showed energy. Now, listen, the Sabres, they've given up, what, 32 goals in 18 periods, somewhere around there.
Yeah, they score a bunch and give up a bunch. But the important thing to remember about them, they're a team that still was talking about getting into the playoffs this year. So it's not like they've mailed it in. They're not playing very well. Like, their young guys are not responding right now at all.
And that's what I like. The Predators' young guys are responding. And in their mind, I think they still believe we got a chance. And if we manage to get in the playoffs somehow, some way, that speaks loudly to what or where this organization is potentially headed with all of these young guys.
It really is. Like, you know those paddles that you have in an ambulance? Mm-hmm. And you, like, rub them together and you go, clear, and then boom! And then, like, somebody's just brought back to life. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what the young guys are. Those little electronic paddles that just brings you back to life. That's what at least it's felt like. And really, you hit on something that I didn't even hit on. In addition to a couple of tough losses, you also lost a lot of your key veteran players. So it's getting knocked down, a rough loss against New York. And look, I didn't expect this team to beat New York. New York is a good team that's going for it. They made a push. They bought at the deadline. I didn't expect it to be 7-0. I didn't expect them to beat New York. But it was getting knocked down against New York, losing some of their key players, losing the veterans, the leaders on the team to injury, and you're able to still come back and play well. It is a test. Now, I'm not going to say that, you know, this team is going to be scoring 7 points a game every single game, because that's just not realistic. But the comeback and the belief in the team that would get knocked down but will come right back up, that's the young guy philosophy and the young guy life breathed into this team so far.
The next thing too is, you know, how is Roman Josi? It's really hard to know, because it's hard to tell exactly what happened with Roman Josi. When pressed, and I think it was Dan Rosen from NHL.com, you know, he's a really good national writer who covers really the teams in the New York area, but he, you know, you got three teams there, so between the three you're covering a lot of teams that come through. He's always very diligent about following up and asking coaches. And so John Hines was like, well, we're still not quite sure, because, you know, Roman Josi stayed home, so he's not checking on Roman every hour. Obviously, if you knew he was going to be back in the next game or two, that would give you a lot more hope of staying in this thing a little bit longer. If you knew he was going to be out for the next week, 2 weeks, and I don't know what it's going to be, you know, that might change the picture a little bit. So tomorrow, I think when they arrive at the rink, how Roman Josi is will be something everybody's looking at. But, you know, that's one. And then, you know, the Forsberg thing, we talked about it. It's just so frustrating, I know, for him more than anybody else. But when you have what happened to him happen, sometimes there just can't – when they say no timetable, that's what they meant. I mean, we're going way back. That was the second game after the All-Star break that he went down.
It's been over a month.
And so it just – the symptoms are still – obviously still there, to the point where he has not been able to ramp it up and get close to playing in the game. So we don't know when that's going to happen. Same thing with Parson. I don't know if you guys saw that. It was a late night game.
Yeah.
He went through a real awkward fall, and you could tell he kind of lost the feeling in his arm. It was really scary to him for a moment. Then he got up, and the next day it was like, well, hopefully this will work itself out and he'll be back in a couple of years. He's missed now 13 games. So It's just frustrating. I'd love to see what this team would look like now with these young guys and the guys that are still on the roster but haven't been able to play now for weeks. Like, Johansson's another one. He's now been gone for we know he's out for
he's
the rest
out,
of the season. But it'd be cool to see what it'll all look like with everybody. So I was even doing a depth chart for next year and taking a look. And, you know, with some salary cap space to work with, some young guys coming in, you're like, okay, this doesn't have to be a full rebuild at all. Like, they've got some options on how they want to attack next year.
Predators in action tomorrow night at home, hosting Ellie Tolvanen and the Seattle Kraken. A little two-game homestand against the Kraken on Thursday.
Yes, Mr. Tolvanen.
And Saturday.
Mr. Tolvanen. We'll be watching him, won't we? Yes, we will.
Hey, Preds fans, hang out tomorrow night before the Preds game at the Superbook Lounge and Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway with 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. You can place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials, plus enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Coming up next, I gotta give the suit a hard time. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. This week's Nashville Best Deal of the Week is Eastside Bowl in Madison. This week, get 2 hours of bowling plus shoe rentals for up to six people for just $45. That is 2 full hours of bowling plus shoes for up to six people for just $45 at Eastside Bowl in Madison. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals to get yours now. Vandy basketball in action tonight at home Memorial Gym, tip at 6 o'clock against UAB. Win this one and you are headed to Vegas for an NIT championship bid.
I will say this like I have many times before. I know the NIT is not the spotlight that the NCAA is, and it never will be. But if you can win the whole thing, which I was a part of a team that did, it's pretty special to win a 32-team tournament. That's pretty cool. And this is a game tonight that will be really interesting. Some people from afar might say, well, all they got to do is beat UAB. If you take a look, the line is even. It's gonna, and that's, this game is in Vanderbilt, you know, in Vanderbilt's den, Memorial Gym, where they've been pretty good. So that tells you how good UAB is, 27-win team. So that's going to be really good. We had a great conversation with Jerry Stackhouse yesterday on, you know, how they've continued to move forward after getting snubbed by the NCAA committee. To their credit, they keep going. And we had a great conversation with Nick McDevitt, the head coach at Middle Tennessee, who beat UAB and beat Florida Atlantic. Out of that same league, Conference USA, Florida Atlantic's got Tennessee tomorrow night in the Sweet 16. And so the matchup that we got to watch, Jelly Walker, one of the best players in the Conference USA over the last 2 years. I said, Coach, does he have the green light? He says, it's a neon green light. 333 three-point attempts. 333, that's just three-point attempts. He also gets to the free throw line a bunch, and he shoots a lot of twos as well. So he's going to have the ball a lot. Ezra Mignon, who's had a great year, he's been one of the best stories on the team. He's gotten better from day one till now. He's a great on-ball defender. That's the matchup to watch for tonight.
Can I say it again?
Yes.
Ezra, he might get jellied.
Oh, no. Well, here's my thought about Vandy tonight. Of course, I will be rooting for Jerry Stackhouse and Vanderbilt tonight. Of course, I will be rooting for Vanderbilt to get to Vegas and to win it all. 100%, I think we're all behind them. But I think right now, Vanderbilt already proved to me everything that I needed to see this season and the regular season. You know, if Vanderbilt goes on to win the NIT, great. Outstanding. Wonderful. And that'll be a trophy to add to the trophy case. But the SEC has been more competitive, a more competitive basketball league than it has been in a really long time. I would say it's safe to say the SEC was the most competitive conference in all of college basketball this year. And Vanderbilt, in the latter half of the season, looked really good in it. They beat Kentucky twice. They made it as far in the SEC tournament as they did. This being such a competitive league and Vanderbilt looking as good as they did in this league, I think proved to me all that I needed to see from Vanderbilt. Everything else from now on, moving forward in the NIT, all that's supplemental and all of that is fun and it's good postseason experience and it's fun to go on the road with the team and to watch this team continue to compete against teams across the country. But for me, Vandy proved to me all they needed to prove, and that's the most in a positive way. I mean that in a completely positive way.
Well, this will be the last home game they get, right? So I think what they've done since, let's just say the low point, they lost to Grambling. They were 7-6 in the preseason going into the SEC, and you're like, okay, where's it going here? Right? It's you're supposed to be a little bit better here. Wait a minute. They don't have Scottie Pippen back. Are they going to crater here? You know, there were people going, hey, I need to see more. And I didn't blame any Vanderbilt fan. You're hungry. It's been a while since it's had success.
You want to be good.
Yes. And so to their credit, they have really improved, and they've added some momentum, some fire back. There's an excitement when they play now The fan base is energized. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're Jerry Stackhouse, and this, remember we talked to Nick McDevitt about mm-hmm. this yesterday, how difficult it is year to year to exactly. A, keep your players, and B, look around and see how you're recruiting. You know, you can go get a guy out of this, what did he say, 1,700 kids in the portal?
Yeah.
1,700. So. That's not even the high school players, the junior college players. These are all just players that want to transfer. So I think now Vanderbilt's a little bit more of a school where you're like, hey, Jerry Stackhouse has got something going over there. Maybe I want to take a look at that, you know, with transfers and high school kids. So hopefully he's got some momentum where he's going to keep building a higher level of talent on his roster. Because we know this, guys get better when they play for him. Scottie Pippen improved a ton from the time he got there, from the time he left. Tyron Lawrence is a great example. Mm-hmm. He gets better every year. He's averaging like 20 points a game the last five, six, seven games. Ezra Mignon, great example of a guy that gets better. So I think he's got something going that hopefully will be a little magnetic that will continue to get good players.
Well, this team finished, albeit it was tied, but they finished fourth in their division, in a division that was probably the toughest division in all of college basketball. They started off, you know, slow, but they picked it up toward the end. They had some really good wins toward the end of the season. And I can't, you know, like you, Caroline, whether they win it or not, I hope they do, but whether they win it or not, it's not going to change what I think of Vanderbilt and what they can potentially be next season.
I'm already impressed.
Yeah.
Before we go, I have to give the suit a hard time before he heads off to Vegas, saying Derrick Henry's not elite yesterday. I heard that, and I dropped my phone that was in my hand.
You said it.
Shame on you, Chase McCabe. Derrick Henry's not elite. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at Central Barbecue at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Peace.